Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel, SI's Ross Dellinger.
There's that old line, right? There's honor amongst thieves. They don't tattle on each other primarily because they don't want to be tattled on.
And SI's Pat Forty.
It is my favorite possession. I like it more than most of the people in my family. Like, if you give me an option of sitting in the house with the family or going outside and sitting with a beer and grilling meat, I will take the grill.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And I apologize if I didn't say that with enough Boston honk. I'm not Dan Wetzel. I'm Pat Forty, and I'm with Ross Dellinger. And Dan, we presume, is under a table in a Bavarian beer hall in Munich, or he's actually on vacation. Tells you who really cares, listeners, about you and your information and your well-being. That's me and Ross. Dan cuts and runs after the Masters and heads immediately to Germany to drink beer that's a lot better than what he usually drinks. So he will hopefully be back next week. This podcast will be smarter and funnier without him. So thanks for listening. And going to hit a lot of football topics, maybe a little glance across basketball as well here. But Ross, want to start with this fresh news Tuesday morning. Jim Phillips, 3-year contract extension with the ACC to remain as commissioner through basically the end of the decade here. What's your reaction to that? What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, obviously it comes at an interesting time, right? The Big Ten is still searching for a commissioner, and they're about over 2 months now into the search for a commissioner, 2.5 months into the search for a commissioner. There was a thought that they could hit that mark, hire somebody by mid-April, but it's mid-April and there's nothing. And then I think a Big Ten president came out actually a few weeks ago and said it might be more like May. So, the fact that obviously the connection to Jim Phillips is pretty obvious, right? Former Northwestern athletic director who many believe finished runner up to Kevin Warren the last time the Big Ten commissioner job was open. Many believe that he should have been hired instead of Kevin Warren, many in that league. So there was a sense that maybe he this time around would be his time. But I think over the last few weeks, at least the things I've heard is that wasn't probably going to happen. And now we maybe see part of why, right, is that several weeks ago, apparently, he agreed to a contract extension. So this has been in the works for a little while. I'm a little surprised the ACC hasn't released it, actually. It came out from ESPN, and we confirmed it this morning that he did. They did. The two parties did agree to an extension. So I guess he's basically out of the Big Ten mix, which, again, I think over the last month, I think a lot of people had given me that indication that he was out and that he wasn't, going to be the guy. And so now he's with the ACC for, at least probably about 7 more years or so, it appears, according to the deal. So, but, some would say big win for the ACC. There's probably some disappointed Big Ten folks who 3 years ago wanted him as commissioner and did again this year. So interesting situation there. Certainly watching the Big Ten again, there was a target date for mid-April, and the CFP commissioners meet in about 2 weeks to start grinding kind of on finishing up, finalizing 2025-26 playoff or 2024-25 playoffs, and then looking to 2026 and beyond. And I don't know who's going to be there to represent the Big Ten. Maybe one of their deputies, I guess.
Interesting. And yeah, really good question, because one thing that I heard throughout the basketball season was a degree of carping from Big Ten people of like, nobody's in charge. Hmm. Who are we actually dealing with from the conference office? So that remains a void. And yeah, it's interesting, like the way career arcs can take you in any profession. But, Jim Phillips, Chicago guy, Northwestern AD, just always seemed like the kind of guy that would be wheelhouse Big Ten commissioner material. And then the landscape just kind of changed. And all of a sudden, people are looking outside the box for non-athletic directors and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people within the league thought he would be a slam dunk 3 years ago when they did hire Kevin Warren. And now he's pretty well locked in for the foreseeable future with the ACC while the Big Ten doesn't have a commissioner. And, you know, as you said, it looked like he wasn't going to be the Big Ten commissioner. I don't have full clarity on whether that was the Big Ten's decision or Jim's decision or perhaps mutual. I don't know. That like, we don't really want you and I don't really want them. I don't know. But
it'd be tough. You know, you would think, Pat, it'd be if you're Jim, obviously Chicago guy, his wife and I believe his youngest son still live there. They're moving now. They're moving, I believe, this summer. I think he's looking for a house in Charlotte because they're moving ACC headquarters, of course, from Greensboro to Charlotte. And so they've been looking for a house. So I think his wife and youngest child are moving to Charlotte maybe this summer after the school year. But they're still there. You know, he commutes there quite a bit. He was at Northwestern for what? It felt like forever as athletic director, was in that conference for a while in general. And just felt, like more of a fit. And then you look at the grand scheme, you know, the grand scale of things and the situation financially that the Big Ten is in compared to the ACC, which, of course, as we all know, is locked in this television deal that puts it at certainly a disadvantage when looking at the ACC and the Big Ten or the SEC and the Big Ten deals. And you would thought that, you know, all this lines up for him to jump at some kind of opportunity there. And maybe either he didn't get that opportunity or, you know, and a lot of people have said this, Jim Phillips is kind of a man of his word, so to speak. You know, you could describe him as such. He's kind of old school in that nature. He's not going to leave you high and dry and all that. So maybe this was him saying, you know, I made a commitment here. I'm going to stay and kind of see it through. I'm gonna not bail. I'm not gonna not quit on the ACC. So I don't know what happened, but it's certainly be interesting to follow, and it'll be interesting to talk to Jim one of these days. I was near Greensboro over this last week, actually, on a trip that I know we'll talk about maybe a little later, but I couldn't get him. He was a little busy. His schedule was a little full. He was running in and out traveling, so we couldn't sit down, but. It'll be interesting to see what he says next time we can speak to him.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, let's talk for a minute just about the general state of the ACC, which you alluded to. And, you know, they've been in, I guess, an element of limbo in terms of their contract status with media rights and their grant of rights. And that's been a sore spot with a lot of people within the league that, this was a John Swofford agreement with ESPN that Jim Phillips inherited, and there's just been not much of any way to do much about it to change the reality of what the ACC is. It's a stable league in terms of having everyone together for a long period of time, but the money is relatively flat because of the length of that deal at a time when everyone else is seeing explosive growth in revenue, and that's created some discontent. Like, how do we get out of this? And ESPN, not surprisingly, from a business standpoint, is like, well, we're not changing this. This is a great deal for us. Why should we make a change here? So that's led to some, you know, speculation. Well, I mean, more than speculation. We know there's been some ACC schools that have at least looked around to try to weigh options about, hey, if we are stuck at a disadvantageous situation from a revenue standpoint, can we get out of this? And the grant of rights seems to be pretty ironclad that no, you cannot without an extraordinary cost in terms of forfeited money, in terms of ill will, in terms of probably what would be legal wrangling. So what is the state of the ACC as you see it for the rest of Jim Phillips' tenure, for the rest of this decade?
Yeah. It's certainly unstable. I think I don't know. You could say unstable, but as you mentioned, the one thing they do have in a way is stability, right? Because this ironclad deal keeps everybody together. But unstable in a way that I think certain members, you could probably guess the three or four, and a lot of it, this has come out kind of publicly lately with the Florida State Athletic Director Mike Alford going before his board a few weeks ago and kind of airing the grievances, so to speak, and the frustrations. But there's a few of the schools in the ACC that are pretty frustrated. And I think if you look at it from that angle, it is unstable because it's hard to see some of these schools just sitting back for 13 years and being at a massive deficit and disadvantage to the Big Ten and the SEC. They could be, you know, it's one thing to be, and all this, of course, is around, as you said, the TV contract, the ACC TV contract compared to the Big Ten and the SEC TV contracts. You know, they could be, each school could be down $20 to $40 million a year over the next, you know, 12 or so years. I mean, the Big Ten deal comes up, would come up potentially twice before the ACC deal is done. And the SEC deal comes up at least once. So they could definitely be financially at a disadvantage. And that you know, and while I was on that trip through a lot of ACC schools and visited a lot of them, that was brought up quite a bit, is that, look, you know, you can deal with a $10 million gap, maybe even a $15 million gap. But at some point, when you get up to the $25 and $30 million gap, when you take that every year for 5 years, if you're down $30 million, right, you're closing in on $200 million gap per school there over a 5-6 year period. And that's somewhat unsustainable. And the gap between the ACC and the two power leagues will grow to a point where it'll be untenable. So in a way, it's stable. If everybody holds with the grant of rights, which it depends on what lawyers you speak to, if it's ironclad. But in a way, it's unstable because I think because it's hard to believe that the Clemsons, the Florida States, even the Miamis, and maybe some others will be okay with it staying status quo for 13 more years. And so they're in a little bit of a tricky situation. And Jim Phillips, I think, and other presidents, administrators in that league are trying to figure out ways to generate more revenue. And there's been a big topic of discussion about the revenue distribution model in the ACC and it changing and rewarding the power, you know, teams based on performance and having an uneven distribution of revenue. Even that, even if you do that, that doesn't close a $20, $30, $40 million gap. It might close the $3 to $5 million gap or something like that, but it's not going to close that gap. So right now, there seems to be no easy solutions to this money issue they have.
Yeah, and that's that's the thing about a change to an uneven revenue distribution. It I think would create as many, if not more, problems than it would solve, because you're not fixing a gap between the SEC or Big Ten and the ACC. What you are doing is creating incredible ill will within your own conference. And if you can't get out of the conference, you still have to get along with those folks. Mm. You know, you still have to play against them. You have to schedule against them. You have to decide rules with them, that sort of thing. And if all of a sudden, you know, Clemson, Florida State just say, well, we're better than you guys, we need more money, well, I could understand the inclination to do that. I just think that would create a whole lot of hostility within a league that you can't get out of. So until the scales come closer to balancing what the cost would be to get out versus the revenue gained by getting out and having a place to get to, that's the other thing. You know, what's the appetite in, say, the SEC for Clemson and Florida State? Do we have any sense there? I don't think Florida and South Carolina would be thrilled to have Florida State and Clemson coming into the conference. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think they would be. I think the conference, the easier play would be to get North Carolina and Virginia in states where you don't have competition already, and they are pretty big brand schools, certainly North Carolina, that are broad-based, excellent athletic programs and really good academic programs, because those things do matter to the presidents here. If you reached a point, do you think, Ross, where Clemson and Florida State said, look, we're out, we would like to join the SEC, what would be the response from their in-state neighbors, and would it matter?
Yeah, I get the sense, like you do, they wouldn't be too thrilled. You know, I think that the South Carolinas and the University of Florida would not be thrilled. You know, and we saw this trend, we saw this play out a couple years ago, right, when news emerged that Texas was coming into the league, and you saw how publicly open that Texas A&M, specifically Athletic Director Ross Bjork, was about Texas's entrance into the SEC. I think his quote to me at SEC meetings, SEC Media Days, because that's where it broke, was we want to be the only school in the state of Texas in the SEC. And so that was pretty frank. And I think, I don't know if those other schools feel the same, but I'm willing to assume that they do, that there is some, there's a feeling there that they want to be the only school in that state in the SEC. The thing is, for the SEC, what does it do? You know, you don't have a new state, and it's kind of complicated, but the way the TV media rights dollars work is you get more money, more shares, whatever you want to call it, for having a presence in a specific state. So the SEC's already got South Carolina. It's already got Florida. So you would think, from the SEC's point of view, a new state would bring, you know, more money, more value, like, for instance, North Carolina or Virginia or our new state. So some believe might be that they would be more attractive options than the Clemsons and the Florida States in Miami's. I think that you're looking at three kind of options here for the ACC schools. Behind door one is renegotiating with ESPN and getting more money out of them. Good luck with that. Doesn't seem to be a real good chance there. Door two would be to get enough ACC teams, whether that's 6, 7, 8, 9, and kind of break away and form your own type of deal and renegotiate, you know, have a new TV contract, negotiate a new TV contract, a more lucrative TV contract. And then option three is to do what you're saying, right? Is just like 2, 3, 4 of them break away and go leave and join another league and just fight the legal battle that the grant of rights might present. And that's kind of where we're at. It is a fairly untenable situation. I think Jim Phillips and the presidents are working on door one, trying to get, whether it's renegotiate a TV deal with ESPN or somehow generate more dollars in some way. They've been working on that. No solution so far, though.
Yeah, that's the intriguing part of this for Jim Phillips. Like, you've got a great job, but it's a tricky job and it's a difficult job. And you've got people anxious for a way to upgrade, and there's no real easy way to do it. So it is going to be fascinating to watch this unfold over the course of 10 to 15. Could be, you know, things could change in 5 years. They could change in 10. They could change in 13. I don't know. We'll see. And it's interesting. You brought up the Texas and Texas A&M dynamic with the SEC. Like, Texas just swings such a big stick that they can just tell Texas A&M, look, sorry, but we're bringing in Texas. Clemson and Florida State, really good football programs, but do they have that kind of juice where you can just kind of push over the University of Florida specifically? South Carolina doesn't necessarily have as much clout within the SEC, but the University of Florida does. And having Florida say, well, sure, you just come on in, Seminoles, that might be a little tougher sell. But anyway, that's all down the road. But anyway, that's what Jim Phillips has in his lap for the foreseeable future. Speaking of the ACC, though, as we alluded to, you visited a couple of campuses, saw some spring football, talked to some football coaches. Tell us about that swing you just went on.
Yeah, it was good. It popped in to see some coaches and athletic directors and associate ADs at some schools in the North Carolina and South Carolina and in Tennessee. Just popped in here and there. I think the most interesting talk was with Mack Brown at North Carolina. And hopefully in the next day or two or so, we'll have a story from our sit down with Mack Brown, who, by the way, is, I believe, the oldest coach oldest active coach in FBS right now. He's older than Nick Saban by 2 months. He turned 72 in August, and Nick will turn 72 October 31st. And we talked about various things. We talked about his, you know, career and when it might end, which, big surprise, he didn't show signs of stepping away or suggest that he might step away, because, of course, why would he do that, right? Recruiting. In fact, he was in with a recruit when I walked into the office. He was meeting with a recruit in his family as I waited in the waiting room. So he's still recruiting, still doing it, still having fun, he says. But we talked a lot about the state of college athletics. And, you know, he kind of opened up a little bit. And, you know, as a almost 72-year-old in the industry so long, I think he feels a little sense of that. He can kind of say whatever. And I'll keep some stuff for the story, like I said, that'll hopefully be at SI.com, you know, Wednesday or Thursday. But, you know, I thought it was really interesting that he's ready. And I think this is kind of a feeling among a lot of coaches and athletic administrators I hear from. They're just ready to get on the other side of this bridge. NIL, kind of a bridge to somewhere else. We're going to get to that somewhere at some point. We're taking these incremental steps along this bridge. And he and others are just ready to get there. And look, you know, it's NFL-like right now. It's a semi-pro model. Might as well get there, standardize it, regulate it in some way. You know, have a salary cap system, maybe have contracts. He's just ready to get there. And a lot of coaches and ADs are. They're all starting to come to the realization that this situation right now with the NIL, with the boosters and the collectives, is something they do not like, and they want to get to the part where it's more regulated. So that was really interesting, you know, and I think he believes too that the NCAA Division I should separate and divide, you know, which we've talked about on the show quite a bit, and it's a talking point among college athletics now for several years about how the Power Five branches off and the Group of Five does its own thing and FCS is its own thing. And so, like many, you know, Mack Brown thinks that's the way to go and thinks there should be some kind of commissioner, you know, of college football, or supervisor, he called it, that works within the CFP, under the CFP umbrella. So it was an interesting discussion, you know, and he was pretty open and honest. I think, like, one of his quotes is, we're the mini NFL, we're just like the NFL, you know, so ready to get over that bridge. I think a lot of them are to have a more regulatory system. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes to get over that bridge, because college sports likes to move at a snail's pace.
and he doesn't have that much time.
Yeah.
Nearly 72, yeah, as you mentioned. He's reached the Jim Boeheim stage, huh? Of just like, I'm going to say whatever the heck I feel like. He's not real worried about playing.
No repercussions, nice. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. What are they going to do, fire me? Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. And we've seen a lot of guys his age get out of the business recently in basketball. At least, you know, you look at Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Boeheim and Jay Wright, who's a little bit younger, but still, I think this, all of the tumult of the new world kind of helped hasten their decision to move on. Mack's circumstances are a little bit different because he started a new job just a few years ago at North Carolina. You know, it's not like he was, if he were still at Texas, I bet he would have retired by now. But he's still, I think, you know, trying to get North Carolina to a place where, you know, it can win an ACC championship or come close. And you know, that's probably, I would think, what's kind of motivating him and driving him. And, hey, he's got a quarterback that he certainly likes right now in Drake May. You know, going to be one of the top Heisman choices and presumably a, you know, top two or three draft pick come a year from now in the 2024 draft. So, you know, it's coaches, administrators, everybody, I think, are struggling so much with you know, the dynamics of the new world. And I understand because it's new, and B, it is tumultuous. You know, you use the phrase bridge, you know, whether it's the bridge, it's whether it's just getting the dust to settle, whether it's getting just kind of the market to correct itself and reach some sort of stasis. I think everybody will feel a lot better when we get to that point. Does Mac have any sense for how long this is going to take?
Yeah, no, not really. You know, and you mentioned what drives him and motivates him. His office, first of all, is like stunning. His wife, Sally, is an interior decorator, basically. I don't know if architect is the right word. It's, what am I thinking of? Interior decorator in something else. Yeah. But anyway, she designed the office. It's stunning. It's beautiful. He's got a ring. He's got a coffee table. It's like, It's a ring coffee table, and it's you push a button, and it's like mechanical, and all the rings go from underneath the coffee table to like rise above it. It's crazy. But one of the things in his office is the national championship trophy from his win at Texas in 2005, and he's got a replica of the coach's trophy with the crystal ball, and he made sure to point to it and tell me, Sally left room in the design for a second one. So he's motivated by winning a second one, but he's also, and he went into detail with me on this and kind of got emotional about it. You know, when he was working for TV, he didn't seem he had a purpose in life. And now that he's back in coaching, being around players and young people, he feels like he has a purpose. And, He doesn't show any signs on slowing down. He said this year he didn't take a spring break. He won't go on many vacations. He just wants to be in the office working and changing people's lives. That's what he says kind of drives him and motivates him to. But get back to your other question. He has no idea how long it's going to take. That's the big question right now is somebody within college athletics, are they going to make this decision at some point before the decision on future athlete compensation is made for them, because it's probably going to be made for them by the courts or state law. It's going to be made for them in some way if they don't make it. And even if they make it, it might be made for them either way. So they're a little handcuffed right now, but it's their own fault. Probably they would say, I think a lot of them would say, for dragging their feet in really, as somebody mentioned when I was on this road trip, one of the athletic administrators I talked to, it's our own fault and it's our leader's fault. We had no leader for the last 5 to 10 years, this person said, and of course talking about Mark Emmert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to get a lot of people out there shedding many tears of sympathy with the leaders in college sports for the situation being what it is, because they let it become this, you know, and as we've discussed about 4 million times on this podcast, a lot of the changes are good, and they have not destroyed college sports. They've just made it a different job and to a degree a harder job. Now, some parts of it have been problematic, no doubt about it. Now, I wanted to get to that here. This came up. This was a part of the fallout from the end of the basketball season. Is all right, you know, transfer portal launches into orbit, and we saw it after the football season, and we're going to see it again here. I believe the football portal reopens April 15th. Am I correct on that?
April 15th to May 1.
Yeah. And so you know, this is the high volume move around time, and coaches dislike that. I'm okay with players having the one time free transfer, but then they need to sit out because and not get the waivers that are handed out for, you know, the uncle on dialysis every, you know, time, it seems like. So, but anyway, this was some of the discussion. Jeff Goodman mentioned, covers college basketball, obviously, on his podcast, Field of 68, said it's so bad in the portal right now. I had a coach call me and say that some of his best head coaching friends are actively trying to recruit players on his roster away to their teams behind his back. That's how bad it is. Someone else said, I think that's, this is Kevin Sweeney from our location, Sports Illustrated. I think that's what's been striking to me has been the number of young coaches I've chatted with in recent days and weeks who can't believe how far gone we are. It's one thing when the old guard is fed up, but when people under 35 are telling you how fed up they are, interesting times. And I thought Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News had a pretty good thought on this. So then once again, we have coaches complaining about rules their colleagues violate. Maybe the problem is the colleagues, not the rules. Mm. And that's kind of the heart of where I am on this is, A, name names. Who is trying to get your players? How are they trying to do it? Which players? What's the nature of the contact? And this is the old frustration of coaches want to call us and complain about, oh, this guy there and that guy there. They never want to put their name behind it, and they never want to say exactly what's going on. How do we solve the tampering problem if nobody wants to step up and be specific about tampering?
Yep. Yeah, and that's been a frustration for those, I think, in Indianapolis over at the NCAA. They read and see these coaches and administrators complaining about the issue, complaining about tampering, but then they won't give any specifics or details or examples when they talk to enforcement and infractions folks at the NCAA, and that's really frustrating. There's that old line, right? There's honor amongst thieves. They don't tattle on each other primarily because they don't want to be tattled on. I think there's probably, you know, nobody is squeaky clean, or very few people in this industry are really squeaky clean. So the coaches complaining about tampering, I think many of them are probably doing, or their staffs, or somebody a part of their program are tampering themselves. You know, one thing Mac Brown said when I met with him, he talked a lot about agents, sports agents in this world. You know, for years, the NCAA and college leaders have tried to keep out sports agents and boosters and politicians from college sports. And now all of them are involved in this thing. And he spoke about how agents are representing athletes and, you know, they are approaching other athletes, trying to get them to get in the portal, get representation. And he spoke quite a bit about that to me. He said that in the tampering world, that's getting pretty common is to have an agent reach out to one of your players to have him or try to convince him to get in the portal because, you know, another school is offering all this money and I think part of we haven't seen a whole lot of enforcement from the NCAA is because it's hard to prove some of this stuff. And an agent, and Matt Brown mentioned this, you know, an agent isn't a school, you know, so the agent can do whatever he wants, really, in a lot of ways. He's supposed to abide by NCAA rules, but they're so murky, and he's not a school representative that it makes it difficult. So that's one thing we talked at length about, and you hear that from coaches. But until coaches come clean, until they save you know, text or record calls or something to give proof to the NCAA enforcement that this is happening, probably not going to see a whole lot of enforcement.
Yeah, that's the thing. Coaches are reticent to come forward with information because of what they're doing themselves, and then B, yeah, do they? What are the goods they have? If you do have the third party involvement, does make it harder to close a loophole and construct a case against somebody if there are agents involved, and that's just the way of the world now. As players are going to have agents starting in high school, they actually already did back 30 years ago, but that's going to be much more above board. I do think one of the funny things from the fall was talking to an AD. They were like at a road game somewhere, and like there were agents staying at their hotel. And he was like, "Hey, you guys used to have to stay at different hotels, so we didn't see you." Right out there, you know, it's like everything else, it's a lot more out in the open. But you know, this is the nature of the beast, and I do have some sympathy when it comes to the tampering stuff, except for the inability for coaches to come forward with what they know in specific terms, and then for the NCAA to be able to have anything actionable, something that they could that they can actually really do something about. So that's kind of the problem there. By the way, we have breaking news on the podcast. We have Wetzel has sent a picture of a giant beer stein, Ayinger, private brewery, a nice frothy head on the thing. Ross typed back, "I hate you," and trust me, that goes for me too. I think we all hate Dan at this point. Off in Germany drinking. And also, by the way, his horse, Wetzel the Gelding, last week, a well-beaten second. let's note that. Wetzel the Gelding's derby path is not very clear at this point. So while he's enjoying his beer, we will continue grinding out the content here for our listeners.
He went from drinking the worst beer that he likes to drink in America to like some of the best beer in the world. I hate him.
Maybe he'll be cured when he comes back and he'll actually drink good beer here in the United States too. I doubt it. He sees the Busch Light, you know, 4.69 a 12 pack or whatever the heck it is. I think it'll pull him back in. All right, we've been talking about conference situation. We talked about the ACC, Pac-12. We've been waiting. Still no media rights news on the Pac-12, and now all indications are it's going to be late spring, maybe even summer. You know what? June is what we're looking at now. What's going on there, Ross?
Yeah. We're this thing continues to push back, like you mentioned. I don't know what to believe anymore. I told somebody the other day, I don't believe anything I read, nor do I believe anything I hear, because this continues to change. This situation just continues to change. And, you know, I think this has been one of the more tricky issues to follow right now and sift through is the situation with the Pac-12, its media rights deals combined with the Big Ten's or Big 12's chase for expansion. These two storylines have obviously intersected, and Pat and I think we discussed this on this call before, like we've kind of stayed away from it just because it's been so difficult to figure out, and there's been some agendas out there, and it's hard. It's been hard to see through. But the latest intel, and it's been reported here and there and just talking to people late last week, was that it's going to be at best a mid-May type of deal, and at worst maybe in the middle of the summer, in June or July, maybe something happens. You know, I will say this, the expansion of the Pac-12, which San Diego State seems like a foregone conclusion to be going to the Pac-12 and maybe SMU, the expansion of the Pac-12 it's kind of running parallel with the TV rights deal. I think they need the TV rights deal to happen, and then they'll package, maybe it'll be some package deal. And for, like, I know for San Diego State, they have kind of a, they have a deadline. If they don't alert the Mountain West that they are leaving by, I think it's June 30th, at the end of June, then their exit fee like doubles or triples in the amount. And so if you want to put like a soft deadline on it, that would be it, you know, at the end of June. So July 1 or so would be that. But it's been interesting to follow. And look, I don't think, again, hard to know what to believe, but I don't think it's actually a money issue with this. I don't think the money's going to be that different from what the Big 12 is getting. I think, you know, the big issue is the visibility of the schools, as we've talked about on the show before. You know, Big 12 has the ESPN and Fox contracts, although we don't know how many Big 12 football games and basketball are on linear compared to streaming. We don't know that yet. That hasn't really come out. That's kind of a big question, because one of the issues Big 12 is having is how much is on, you know, our package, how much will be on linear. So that's kind of more of the questions. I feel like it's not as much about the money, which a lot of people are making it about. I think it's more about the visibility of the deal. So clearly they're talking to a lot of different platforms. And I think the latest one to emerge from The Athletic, I don't trust anyone in this situation, unfortunately, although there are good reporters reporting on some of this stuff. But I think they reported that CW, you know, was in the mix, which of course has Live Golf. We saw a few reporters throw out Ion. You know, Apple and Amazon have been thrown out there. I mean, shoot, 2 months ago, one of the most respected media reporters, reported, was it Sports Business Journal? Maybe it was Marsh. Was it, shoot, Pat, do you remember who reported about Apple?
John Arand?
John Arand, yeah. About the Apple deal. And nothing's happened with that. That was just like 2 months ago. And I think the report was like Apple was closing in or something on a deal. They were closing in on a deal with Apple. And we haven't seen anything on that. So this thing keeps changing, and it's hard to kind of put your finger on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I think our default position at SI has been read it all, absorb it all, believe little to none, at least not anything that you trust enough to go forward with. So this is going to be a continuation of the waiting game. But yeah, when the CW came out, it's like, and there's just been so much dust kicked up around this, and there may well be something. They may be talking to the CW, in which case the All-American, the show that that Wetzel likes watching, I think is also on the CW. So maybe he can get the Oregon State game and the All American on for a doubleheader or something on whatever the heck he watches. But the dynamics involved here of the Pac-12 having to slow play this, probably prudently, to make sure they've got the best deal they can get and have all their ducks in a row, with some of the people on the outside just waiting, like, okay, let's go. Like the San Diego State people, I saw them at the Final Four, obviously. And I mean, they're straddling that line of like, oh, yes, we're happy in the Mountain West, but have you heard anything from the Pac-12 today? How about tomorrow? You know, I mean, they like, it will take them 5 minutes to get that thing pushed through the Board of Trustees, the president, and everybody else to sign with the Pac-12. So they're just sitting there waiting, and that was kind of part of the awkward tension here at the Final Four. They have a new commissioner, Gloria Navarez, who came from the West Coast Conference, and she's wearing her San Diego State colors, and she's supporting San Diego State. And we all are pretty sure San Diego State is leaving as soon as they possibly can. So, you know, that's the nature of college sports as it is right now. You know, and then, as you alluded to, what do they do with this? If they're not going to expand to 11, right? They're going to expand to 12. So is that, you know, is 12's SMU?
Yeah, I mean,
what happens?
I as crazy as it sounds, I think they'd be okay with 11. It doesn't make sense to me either. Like, I don't know why the odd number of teams would seem to pose a problem. But they're okay with just 11. And it's been, SMU's been described to me as more like, you know, not certainly not as in the bag as San Diego State. And and that's obviously from the Pac-12's perspective. I mean, the SMU would go to any Power Five, I'm pretty sure. But it hasn't. It's I don't know that the support is as overwhelming in the Pac-12 for SMU at as it is for San Diego State. So yeah, do you stay at 11? Is there anybody else? Is there UNLV? Is there Fresno? Boise, Gonzaga basketball obviously has been mentioned. So all of those seem to be options. I don't know how really serious, though, they are options. I don't know that they're very serious for the Pac-12. Now, the Big 12, if they don't get some of those Pac-12 schools, right, and the Pac-12 deal is good enough, I still think they're looking. Brett Yarmark is aggressive. I think he's still looking for expansion. I think in a way he promised kind of expansion and wants some additions, and he's very aggressive. And so you look at some of those other schools for, again, the Gonzaga piece, the Fresno, the UNLV, you wonder if the Big 12 has some interest in those schools. And I would assume many of them would have interest in the Big 12. Fresno and certainly Gonzaga would give the Big 12 the West Coast time zone, and they would become they'd become the conference with the Big 10 with a team in every right in
all
every
four
time
zones.
Zone.
Yeah,
all four time zones. Yep. So that is important for some. It's crazy that we're talking about that because that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't become a conference at that point, right? You're like just a national association, but this is where we are in college athletics. Bigger, better, more money, all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's a media consortium. It's not a conference, but that I do think that there is some desire to have that four time zone national brand sort of approach. How viable that truly is or not, that's up to other people to decide. But I think that the Big 12 likes the idea of that if they can pull it off to in a way that's financially amenable. Real quick, another Pac-12 note. Cliff Kingsbury joining the USC staff.
I thought he was in Thailand
for sure.
With a one-way trip. One-way ticket. Guess he bought the ticket back.
He bought the return. He's coming back. He's coming back to college after being in the NFL for a while with the Arizona Cardinals. Kingsbury and Lincoln Riley getting back together, two Mike Leach guys. Both, I think they overlapped for a year as players at Texas Tech. This is really interesting to me. Is this too many cooks in the quarterback kitchen? Clearly Lincoln Riley doesn't think so, or he wouldn't have brought Cliff Kingsbury on. But you have the returning Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Caleb Williams. You have quarterback whisperer Lincoln, and now you bring in quarterback guy Cliff. How do you see this working out?
Yeah, it's interesting. And you mentioned the cooks in the kitchen. These are pretty big personalities, all of those three. Even Caleb, for sure Caleb. So Caleb than maybe even the others. Caleb Williams is, if you meet with him or talk to him, he has a team around him, a marketing team, agency. I mean, he's like an NFL player. I mean, he's probably the most NFL-like player of all the college players. So he wants one thing. His dad is pretty again, influential, his agency, his marketing people around him. They're pretty, strong-minded. And then now you have, you've got Lincoln and his offensive background, and now you pair that with Cliff and his offensive background. These are strong-minded people with offensive backgrounds. I would guess that Lincoln making this move is, but he's thought it out and he believes that it will work and that everybody will kind of get along. I think it surprised me a little bit to see that news, drop Monday night that was happening just because of what you're talking about, right? There's a lot of, you know, you've got a former NFL head coach, and in you talk to I'm trying to remember Cliff Kingsbury's career course. So he was, didn't he do like a 2 week stay as offensive coordinator at USC after he was fired by Texas Tech? Yeah. And then, and then went on to the NFL. You wonder if he would have stayed if Lincoln Riley would have ever even been hired. Would they have been good enough, you know, offensively? It's an interesting question under Clay Helton. It's an interesting question. But, you know, you talk to former college head coaches who go to be assistants, who, you know, gotten fired or whatever, and they go on to be assistants at a place. And it's hard. Like, and this is an NFL head coach that's going back to college to be not just an assistant or a coordinator, but an analyst, which means he's not supposed to work or coach hands-on with players, although we know that that rule gets broken all the time. And so it'll be interesting to see how he handles this. And what kind of specific role that he'll have, because it's when you're captaining the ship, and you've been doing that for so long. He was at Tech for so long, and then in the NFL, that it's hard to go from driving the boat to throwing off the anchor. So,
yeah, for sure. That all of a sudden, like, hey, here's a bunch of tape. Find us a good third and six call. You know,
right.
Hey. I think this will be fascinating, and I will freely preface this as 100% speculation. I don't know, but I'm wondering if Lincoln is looking for a different voice to amplify the same message, you know, and that's to Caleb or maybe to other people in the offense of, I run into this plenty of times with like, parents that like you're close enough with your kids that they kind of to a degree maybe stop listening to you, so you need the coach to say something for you, and then you can say, I'm so glad you say that, because he'll listen to you, he won't listen to me. Or like, if I'm sure you've done this too, you get invited to a class to visit, you know, and speak, a journalism class or something, and the teacher will say, thank you for saying that, because coming from you, they'll listen to you.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's the case or not here. Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley may be 100% on the same page at all times, and this is just another added, you know, bit of expertise. But I just kind of wonder, because I just think Kingsbury and Lincoln seem so similar in a lot of ways that this is just a way to kind of further reinforce the same thoughts. But
That's a good point. That's a good point. By the way, Pat, some basketball news that you may well want to weigh in on. Kyle Filipowski of Duke announced he's returning, and at the same time, five-star Duke signee McKenzie, and I don't know how to say that last name, but has announced that he has requested a release from his national letter of intent and will reopen his recruitment. At the same time that Filipowski has announced that he's returning, I'm guessing that's a little bit, those two things are related, but figured you might want to weigh in on the Duke basketball breaking news there. Interesting.
Wow. That's wild. I mean, I thought Filipowski was, you know, probably ticketed to be a top 10 pick, showed a lot his freshman year. And for him to come back, very significant, big news for Duke, and gives him, you know, that added experience. And Mackenzie Mbako, I've seen play, really good, very, very good player. I'm sure they would love to have them both, but if this was a situation of either or, you'd take the guy who's a year older and, you know, maybe 3-4 inches taller. Very skilled. So that's really interesting. And now there is going to be a frenzy of trying to get a hold of that suddenly available five-star player. So, basketball is so nuts. I mean, it is week to week what the hell is going on where. I mean, football is, right? We're used to that, but basketball takes it to a different level just because the impact of each individual player.
By the way, Duke was one of the schools I mentioned on my little tour last week, and they, they're just the school's boosters and and folks are just starting to get into the NIL game and realize they've got to do it. I think they were pushing it off for a little while, and they're just starting to really ramp up, and they've got a collective. So you'd imagine Filipowski has struck some deal that probably will be announced at some point with the Duke collective.
Yeah, well, good for Kyle. Get paid and stay at Duke. That's not a bad combination. I could deal with that. All right, quick last story to get to here before we sign off. And this, we're going to do one show this week. This show has been so good, you really don't need a second one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, we'll be back with the diminished Dan Wetzel next week, provided he ever gets out of the Munich beer hall. But Ross, I need your input on this, okay?
What we got?
Got a family dynamic situation here. I am close personal friends with my grill. Okay. It is my favorite possession. I like it more than most of the people in my family. Like, if you give me an option of sitting in the house with the family or going outside and sitting with a beer and grilling meat, I will take the grill. My sister-in-law, while I was gone for the Final Four, ran over my grill. It was an accident.
Wow. Wow.
But yes, she backed up, knocked it over, broke it. Apparently, this is a green egg style grill. It wasn't a literal green egg,
no.
But it was close to it. Yeah.
Oh, no,
and so
a green egg.
The egg top basically cracked, and Humpty Dumpty could not be put back together again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, there's been a mourning period. It's been difficult, but
a grill burial.
Yes. My question, how mad am I entitled to be, and how much financial compensation am I entitled to from a family member for running over my grill?
Those green eggs are not cheap. How old was this one?
They're not. It was pretty old. I mean, it'd been family a long time. That's, you know, again, another reason I and the grill were close. We'd been together for quite a while. So yeah. 15 years, maybe? Like
oh,
that.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So it...
Maybe 10, but it's like 15.
A green egg, being as expensive and nice as they are and durable and stuff, I would guess that they can last pretty long. But like a normal grill, I would think, you know, lifespan of 8 to 10 years is it. So I'm guessing I don't know what kind of condition it was in, but those things are pretty doable, can last a while. But I don't know, it being that old, and how sure are we that it was an accident?
Well,
that's my big question.
That's a good question. I know that my in-laws do like to come over when I put chicken wings on that grill. Yeah. So I don't think they would do it on purpose, because they want the chicken wings.
Yeah.
So I'm going to chalk this up as a pure accident.
Yeah. Well, in that case, and given the age, I don't know. I don't know that you're owed a ton. Maybe they can buy you a case of Sierra Nevada and smooth things over, huh?
Darn it. I was hoping for more out of you. Thanks. Hopefully they don't listen to this edition of the podcast, because I was ready for you to say, oh, they owe you thousands.
Where was your grill where it was able to be backed over, by the way?
It was in a corner of the driveway. See, to your point, like the grill is getting on in years, and so like the wheels don't roll very well, so you can't really like take it in and wheel it out very easily. It's like an old dog that you can't get outside and inside very easily. So you know, so it had to stay outside with a cover over it and everything. But so yeah, she got it, backed her car into it, and down it went.
So you're gonna buy a new baby, I'd assume.
Soon. I mean, it's grilling.
It's grilling weather. I was about to say, in fact, here in DC, it's finally getting warm into the 80s this week for the first time since, you know, September, October. And I'm doing ribeyes tonight. So it's grilling season.
Oh man, now you're hurting me. You can do ribeyes. I can't. I can't do anything. Well, enjoy your ribeyes. One other story I did want to get to real quick, because we need at least one news of the weird story that doesn't involve my grill. The New York Post has a story on the Heinz Big Bean. It is a giant baked bean that, if you look at it, is like almost the size of a football. Comes in a can. You cut it with a knife and a fork, apparently. The headline, "We created a giant baked bean. People want to try it, quote, immediately." Do you see it? Looking at this thing?
I do see it. It looks like a kidney.
Yeah.
It looks like somebody's kidney. My God. Oh, man.
It is what the people need, according to its creators. The people need a big bean in their lives, said Tom Snell, London advertising creative. Ross, do the people need a big bean in their lives?
Oh, my God. No. This thing, I love beans, but, I mean, I'm gagging over here. It just looks gross. I mean, it really looks like an organ out of a human's body. It's this is terrible. And it looks like it's doused in some kind of bean sauce. May or may not be lying on a bed of bread. Is that bread? They put a loaf.
I don't know.
A slice of bread.
I think it is a piece of bread.
Oh my God. I Oh God. What are we doing? No. This bean on toast. Yeah, it's there's a TikTok video if I'm diving into the bean here, and TikTok video made, and yes, it's the bean is placed on a piece of toast and then drizzled with bean sauce. I'm willing to try anything once, but I don't think I'd go back for seconds on this one.
I'm not trying that once. Not even once, man. Forget it. No way, no how, no thank you. England has enough trouble with food, right? They're very sketchy with their food, and this is yet another example of that. I don't think we can go back there. No. I think we're unanimous that we do not need the big bean in our lives.
No.
So thanks for trying, Heinz, but you're out.
That should be the punishment for running over your grill.
There you go. Eat the bean. The whole thing.
Make my sister-in-law eat the bean. Oh, yeah. Boy. That would be mean. That's more mean than I can actually countenance. So, all right. That's enough. That's enough, Falderall. That's our show. Again, we will not have a second show this week, so make this one last. Savor it. Embrace it. Enjoy it. Wetzel allegedly will be back next week. So will the rest of us. We will have more stupidity for you then. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe, leave us nice reviews, and we'll talk to you later.